Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. First of all, a couple of notes here. We will begin our candidate interviews tomorrow morning during this same time slot. We will. We have invited four candidates for public office Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week, and Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week for a 10-minute interview just to promote their candidacy. In no way should this be taken as a Grants Pass Broadcasting endorsement of any kind, just to keep our listening public informed. In the meantime, today's show, city councilors are in studio today. We have DJ Fazer and Brian D. LaGrange. Number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest after the top of the hour news is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, once again, welcome to the microphones of KJO and Mr. Fazer, Mr. D. LaGrange. Once again, welcome. Glad to have you with us here. First of all, homelessness has always been the number one topic for the last few years here on KAJO for this show. But in the meantime, are there other topics that your constituency is talking to you about today before we get into some of those other areas? Brian.
Well, you hit it on the head, Chuck. Yeah. I mean, you know, the past
kind of dominates, doesn't
the past 3.5-4 years have certainly been dominated by the homeless conversation. There have been a lot of other things that have happened, a lot of other results that we've accomplished over the past 3.5-4 years. Currently, we're working on. We had a meeting yesterday where we talked about some urban renewal agency items. We're working on finalizing the plan for Caveman Pool. And I think you'll probably get to this, but we're also talking about forming a public safety advisory committee to.
It's on my list.
Yes,
on my list.
Yes. Yeah. So there are other things happening at the city besides dealing with the homeless issue.
All right, Mr. Fazer.
That reasonably encapsulates exactly what we're talking about. You know, adding on ARPA funds, we've been having conversation about ARPA funds, and those are usually stimulating conversations because these are pots of money that we can produce product with, Those conversations have been ripe lately.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. First of all, well, let's deal with the homeless situation. And I've heard some talk just before we go on the air between the two of you. There are three locations right now. There's the J Street campground. There's the A Street campground. And soon to be the campground right next to the Grants Pass Police Department headquarters. And it looks like that lot is almost complete and ready for occupancy. What's the status? What's the plan? Do we have one going forward at this point?
Sure. Well, we have a resolution on the council agenda for tomorrow evening that officiates the property adjacent to the public safety department as a site for resting. It also mentions that it's the intent to take the 704 A Street property off of the list of resting sites, which that conversation needs to be had about. How many campsites do we have currently, or resting sites, and how many do we need, right? My immediate thought about if we are going to maintain two on the J Street property, whereas it's large and accommodating, has the most immediate need for replacement as...
Well, you've got a water treatment plant coming in the spring.
The intention, last I heard, is to begin construction May of next year, and I haven't heard any different, so... It's going to be an exercise, a challenge, if you will, to try to identify another site for J Street. Specifically, if we have another readily available site, we need to determine, are we going to be able to replace the J Street site, especially considering if we decide to replace the A Street site.
All right. Do we have another site that is being talked about behind the scenes? Are there any other available areas that could be utilized?
Nothing official at this point.
Yeah, when you shake your head, that doesn't work on radio.
Oh, that's right. It's a bad habit I haven't got rid of yet.
They can't hear you shake your head on radio. We appreciate that. Brian, do you want to weigh in on this?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, right now we have two active resting sites, the J Street and the A Street. J Street is quite a bit larger. Last time I went by both sites, the J Street site had about 75 tents and the A Street site had about 25 tents. So, 100 tents, that's a fair amount to accommodate. So opening up the site by the police station, I think tomorrow night there's going to be discussion about whether that is replacing the A Street site, or if there's enough need that it's in addition to the A Street site. And I'm not sure where that conversation is going to end up. There's also been talk about potentially keeping the A Street site as kind of a backup site or an emergency site in case there's a situation where something happens and we need to shut down and completely evacuate one of the other sites so that there is a site that can be used as a backup. So I could potentially see that happening. But ultimately, I think the goal, at least from what I've been hearing from the community, is, you know, these unmanaged sites are, you know, they're dangerous, they're less than ideal. So, you know, ultimately, I would hope that we're going to try to work towards getting a managed site. And I think the best outcome would be to have one site that is managed. So it's in one spot, there's somebody there managing it. And so we don't have to keep doing this shuffle, because ever since the injunction got lifted, we've kind of been, you know, we've been doing the best we can, but we've been planning on the fly, and it's gone okay. But I think it would be nice if we can eventually get to a place where we're not having to scramble so much.
Your word, unmanaged campsite, and certainly the J Street is an unmanaged campsite and is in the news pretty regularly with the police department going in there with arresting people. It seems to be an area where if they're not camping there, they're going there, whether it's to sell product, for lack of another word, or to engage or to escape there from law enforcement. What are we hearing about the J Street situation from our local law police officers? Is it a big concern, or is it just an isolated incident on occasion?
This is such a new issue, Chuck, that we haven't really had a new issue being as far as establishing these places for people to rest, time, place, and manner regulations. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean, this is new. The issue isn't new, but having congregations in specific sites is very new. This issue needs to breathe a little bit before we have a realistic idea of the implications on public safety. Going to what was said about illegal or illicit behavior, that behavior is still illegal, right? And I would imagine that the public safety is experiencing those issues and managing them as best as they can for now. We've been in a hurry-up-and-go sort of reactive policy decision-making trend right now regarding these sites. And allowing this situation to breathe and find out what we really need in this community, I think, is very important. I'd like to add on to that this term of unmanaged campsites and whatnot, that's specifically referring to the city, the amenities that the city might provide, right? We have humanitarian nonprofit organizations that are assisting in what we're calling the management of these sites, providing services, bringing water, etc. So to call them unmanaged, that is specifically from the perspective of the city. And we also need to be mindful that any services that the city might provide, in any and all services, and right now I'm specifically referring to these resting sites, any service that we provide, whether it's another amenity such as water or another site that would add square footage, the city needs to prepare to provide that service in perpetuity, theoretically forever. So we need to be diligent and careful in how we expand these services and why that truly responds to the community's needs.
All right, your words, Ed, these services might be required to be maintained in perpetuity. That's forever. Let's talk about cost. And there has been some conversation about cost, but in particular, I believe, for the J Street. I think it's probably both the campsites combined. We talked about, I think, $325,000 about that initially. Other reports have it significantly higher than that. Do we have a real gauge on what it's going to cost to maintain these two areas?
We were given a budget of about $460,000 annually, but I believe that's rather inflated because we have some one-time expenses. I think that's estimated to be $250,000 by extrapolating and estimating and taking away those one-time costs. And that's for those current services provided for the two sites as we have them. And you can imagine any service or amenity or additional sites that will directly correlate to more funds required.
More funds required. All right. If it's $250,000, just as a working number, just off the top of my head, I would say that's two public safety officers. Is that a fair assessment?
Sure.
If we weren't spending that money, we would be able to add a couple of extra patrol officers?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, and that leads us to the next question, and that's the advisory committee that's being proposed by the city council for the local police, what they want to see enforced, what they want to see happen in terms of public safety. Is that fair? And that's coming up, too?
That is. That's coming up on our agenda tomorrow night, but I did want to touch on the crime at the J
Street.
Resting sites.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've heard and from what I've seen, the crime that has been happening at those sites is not in excess of what was happening across all of the parks before that. In fact, I think it makes it a little bit easier for the police to monitor the situation because there's only two sites.
Mm-hmm.
The J Street site actually has a police camera trailer on site. And the fact that everyone is in one location, there's a little bit more accountability. I've been hearing about people looking out for each other a little bit more. And I've been to the J Street site several times, and I've walked around, and I haven't felt unsafe once. So I know that crime still happens at these sites, but I don't think it's worse than it was before we had the sites. And in fact, I think it might even be a little bit less. But with regards to the Public Safety Advisory Committee that we're going to be talking about tomorrow night, I think there's a little bit of, I don't know if confusion is the right word, but I think maybe different counselors have different ideas of what the charge of such a committee might be. And so I think there's going to be some good discussion about of the purpose of that committee. I'm not totally sure where it's going to end up.
All right. Well, we'll see. That's tomorrow night at the city council meeting. Gets underway at 6 o'clock, ladies and gentlemen, in council chambers. We'll continue this conversation when you come back right after this important message.
It's back to school.
Welcome back, everyone. City councilors are in attendance today. We're talking about a couple of things. Of course, the homeless situation seems to be an ongoing topic of conversation because it dominates, well, the public's perception of what's happening right now. And we're talking about also adding in a public safety advisory committee, and that will be dealt with tomorrow night during that city council meeting. What do you envision, Mr. DeLagrange, about that committee? Would you like to see it happen? Are you in favor of it? What kind of parameters could be laid out for it?
I need to kind of hear where council's at with what their charge for the committee is. I think that I potentially could support it, depending on its purpose. I think if the purpose is to help advise city council and to help inform the public of the challenges that we face as a community around public safety funding, public safety staffing, the real need in the community, I think that's something that I could get behind. So if that's where it goes, I think that's something that I could support.
It's an advisory committee. Is it going to be advising the council, or is it going to be advising the city management and law enforcement?
It will be advising council. Mm-hmm. And I think the police department and the fire department will have a part to play in it. Getting the committee information that they need to help inform the public and inform council. But I don't think that the committee is just going to be informing council.
Mm-hmm. All right. DJ, your stand on this advisory committee.
I think it's a great idea. Basically, this was a grassroots development of involvement of constituents during this last discussion and last decision for revenue. And the fact that it's coming from the community really makes me believe that this will be a great node of information and deliberation in the community. This will be another place, another meeting time for people to talk that will have another direct vehicle to council, the policy decision-making board, to make important decisions on the level of service to public safety and the revenue sources, something that we've been challenged with for many years and will be for many years to come. So I look forward to it with enthusiasm. You know, we need to understand that this is an advisory role. You know, they will be looking at levels of service and different potential revenue sources and those kind of different things in concert with council. And they will be able to advise, and perhaps council will be able to get more information from them than they wouldn't already have, which is really important information. And that's the information that comes from the community. Throughout these processes of decision making of revenue and levels of service of public safety, we have been pining for the committee's or the community's input. And that has been at times challenging to get. And I see this as another fine vehicle of getting that information to council so they can make the best decisions for the community.
How do you foresee that council or that that committee made up of? What are the parameters, or is it too early to tell?
Well, there's a membership structure of a budget committee member, a chamber of commerce member, representative of the business community, nonprofit representatives, member from downtown, and two at-large positions with a liaison from police, fire, and council. That's the structure of this advisory.
That's the way it's laid out at this point, and it possibly could change, but it sounds like it's pretty well entrenched at this point.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. You want to weigh in on this committee, Brian?
Well, I said my piece on the committee. Yeah. There was one thing earlier when we were talking about the costs of the resting sites mm-hmm. and services that I just wanted to touch on before I forget. The number, you know, we were talking about in our meeting was $460,000, but just to be clear, staff tacked on a 50% contingency onto the actual cost. So the costs mm-hmm. before that were closer to $280,000, and that $280,000 included, I think, $70,000 for the demolition of that building by the police station. So once you look at the real number for what we're calling services at these sites, it is closer to $200,000. And services, let's be clear, you know, we're not putting a mint on anybody's pillow in the morning. You know,
doesn't buy you very much these days, does it?
Well, $200,000 gets us fencing, gets us dumpsters, gets us toilets, gets us hand washing, gets us the basic necessities so that these sites don't become contaminated, and so we don't get ourselves in potentially another lawsuit for not having sanitary conditions. So it's really the bare minimum when we're talking about services.
All right, what are those services are now guaranteed in perpetuity? Should we move on? Is it certainly water?
Well, you know, if we're going to have to operate these sites, I think it makes sense that we have trash. You know, we have a dumpster, we have toilets, we have hand washing. So I personally don't have any problem, you know, with the city having those services at the sites, because those are just the basic necessities. And, you know, there's just no way to get around that I can see.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much for your insights there. And we'll, of course, keep an eye on that. Moving up towards the top of the hour, I do have another question about some land that just been acquired up in that northwest area, and we're talking about the old hospital property at the corner of Midland and Washington, which has recently been purchased by the city. Is that purchase complete yet?
I think it's still in the final phases. I think there's an environmental study that has to be done, but it's getting pretty close.
All right, and generally, from what I have surmised, the real target there is for low-income housing or multifamily housing for that area. Is that accurate, or is it still up in the air?
It's still up in the air. I think initially our plan is to have it be mixed use with high-density market-rate housing and some mix of commercial. So we're not exactly sure what that looks like. Maybe some commercial on the ground floor with upper story residential, but some sort of mixed use development that that will really fit that part of town well and give us a lot more housing units.
What do we anticipate going into that? A public-private partnership in order to get that off the ground and add to the housing situation that we have here?
Yeah, I think the vision that we have right now is something that we've done with other properties that we own, where the city owns the property and we put out an RFP so that private developers will come in and we will essentially provide the land for them to do the development. And that's the incentive for the developer to come in.
Oh, all right. Is that enough incentive, Mr. Fazer?
Well, so the interesting thing that when people say market rate housing, I think there's just a slight misunderstanding of what that means. Market rate housing specifically refers to housing built without subsidy. So even by a donation of the property, by the very definition of the term market rate housing, this will not be market rate housing, right? I think the conversation needs to talk about the level of subsidy that happens, because a market rate is without any subsidy whatsoever and entirely handled by the private sector. So is our intention to build market rate housing? Well, unless we sell that property and it's handled entirely by private enterprise, it will be market rate housing. But yes, essentially everything Brian said is true of the intentions of council for that property.
Is there anyone out there who has expressed interest once the city acquires this property of purchasing it and developing it in that manner?
Not on this property, no, but there has been some momentum on other properties that are similar in circumstance to this, such as the Nebraska property. There's been interest from developers to develop that into a high-density housing unit, right? So it's shown that it's possible, and it's out there that developers could theoretically join the effort with the city and build housing here, but specifically on that property, this is so early in development that I wouldn't anticipate a plan or really kind of action or revenue allotted to it for years to come.
I have to ask, since you brought up the Nebraska property, I have to ask, because we've been talking about it for years, and I know there's been some progress on getting something done out there. Is there a shovel in the ground yet?
No, there's not. So they were unsuccessful in their endeavors to garner subsidy mm-hmm. from state and federal government that make that project pencil, right? And so as I understand it, they needed to go into the second round and try for a second time. And so therefore, council extended that agreement with the developers to see if they're successful in the next round. And we should know next year.
Well, we're getting close to next year, and that's a good thing. Do we have a feel on how it's going to go, or they're liking and gaining that financing?
It's very difficult to get bearings on the availability of subsidy and where you fall as far as that application cycle. I don't know that information.
All right, Brian, you want to weigh in on that property? We've been talking about this one for years.
Yeah. Well, there's not much for me to add other than it's going to be really great when it's done, whenever that is.
Right. All right, gentlemen, let's see. Just looking ahead on the tomorrow night's agenda, an ordinance for creating a developer install reimbursement district. Pretty straightforward. Also, the resolution adopting allowable locations for camping. So that, once again, pops up. I am negligent in my homework this time. I have not delved into that coming in. Can you give me any extra details on what we'll be talking about in terms of extra camping spaces?
Sure. Well, this ordinance, aside from the swapping or addition, is essentially putting into resolution what council has already enacted via emergency order. The reason we did the emergency order is to expedite adopting this into resolution. So really the only difference in conversation is how many resting sites are we going to have? What are we going to replace? Those kind of different things. So that's really the only difference between what we did a few weeks ago and what we're going to be doing tomorrow.
Tomorrow night at City Council meeting. Stay tuned. Tuesday Talk Show continues after news.
It's time to get ready for fall.
Tuesday Talk Show continues. Ladies and gentlemen, just first a couple of programming notes. We will begin our candidate interviews tomorrow in this same time period from 9:30 to 10:30. That will be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday this week, and Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. We have over 20 candidates there running opposed. If they're running unopposed, we didn't extend the time to them because there's no question about who will win. But to make an informed vote, we'll provide this for you. Bear in mind that it is in no way an endorsement of any candidate or position taken by Grants Pass Broadcasting. The order of appearance was determined by a blind draw. Put everybody's name in a hat and pulled it out. So that will be happening tomorrow right here on KAJO Radio. Also, if you have a question or comment for our guest, if you have a suggestion on how the homeless should be handled, if there's another area that the city should be looking at to make these resting places available, the number to call, 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment directly to our guest today. City Councilors DJ Fazer and Brian D. LaGrange. Gentlemen, once again, welcome back to the microphones of KAJO Radio. We covered a lot of ground in the first half hour here, and we can go back to some of that. But we've also not talked about yet is the caveman pool, and that's a topic that's about ready to come to fruition, is it not? Are we almost done with that one? Brian?
Yeah, this is actually a fun topic for once, so that's nice. We've been working on the Caveman Pool project for several years, actually ever since I was on Parks Committee, which was 4 or 5 years ago. So it's taken us a long time to get to this point, but we finally got to the point where we have agreed on a design for the new pool. And originally, the costs were coming in way higher than we were able to afford. I think they were coming in around $13 million. And so we directed the city manager to go back with the firm and rework the plan to get it closer to within our budget. And so now it's closer to $6.5 million. So we've cut the cost in half, and we've kept, I would say, probably at least 80% of what we originally wanted with the pool. The pool will be a little bit smaller. However, it will have more amenities. It will have a zero depth entry. It will have kind of, you know, like fountain splash park features in that area for younger kids. It will have a water slide. It will have a low dive diving board, and it will have a higher jumping platform. So a little bit of something.
It's a 3-meter platform.
Correct. Right. Yep. So about nine-ish feet or so.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, those are always fun, he said, remembering his childhood. At any rate, DJ, thoughts about the pool here? Are we on topic? Are we on schedule? Is the budget right?
It's very exciting, and the budget is right. And council has worked hard in determining what the affordability and the need of the community is. A lot of those savings came through deciding not to replat the property, redesign mm-hmm. where things are going to go. Keeping the bathhouses the same with some light remodels, keeping the parking the same with maybe some light remodels, and we saved a lot of money there. And I think council's done good work. We allocated the money from Urban Renewal Agency by extending that agency down A Street to encapsulate the pool, and allocated money to that 5-ish years ago. And so that's when that, I believe, the official step went from council to decide to spend money and restore the pool. You tag on some ARPA monies, and we can now afford the pool that council has determined is going to go there by design. So we're waiting for maximum price bids from the contractor, and as far as I can see, is going to be moving forward, and it's very exciting.
That ARPA money, that's a significant portion of the budget, is it not?
1.2 million?
Yeah, I think it's 1.2 of the 6.5.
Okay, and that money has to be allocated by the end of the year, so we're looking at getting this signed how soon?
Well, that's actually changed. So before the meeting yesterday, there's been a new clause added to the stipulations of ARPA that says that cities that have taken in fewer than $10 million can actually account for the remaining funds as a revenue loss. And then that will circumvent the deadlines of allocated by December 2024 and spent by December 2026. And so council showed favor for taking that quote unquote revenue loss and being, and so what the intention is still to spend the monies on what have been allocated previously determined, but we no longer have to adhere to those strict deadlines.
The deadlines have gone away in essence.
Correct. And that's a really heads up play, because if after December 2024, we can't reallocate or renegotiate any failure to perform between then and December 2026 would just go right back to the national treasurer. So now the federal government came up with this clause that said, hey, there's communities out there that are having difficulties with their deadlines, and so they've allowed smaller communities like ourselves to circumnavigate those deadlines.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. We have a caller. Good morning. You're on the air. You have a question or comment for our guests?
Yeah, I do. It seems like the population, the homeless population, has close to doubled in the last couple of weeks. A couple of weeks ago, I remember hearing that there were about 50 tents, and I heard Mr. De La Grange say now it's about 100, and that's my observation as well, because I drive the parkway every day and hadn't seen it for several days and was surprised to see how much more crowded it has become. So I'm kind of curious where all those additional people are coming from. I mean, are they coming in from other cities now? Or, you know, I was surprised to see it double. I also, I think as far as the cost, they're being minimized a little bit in this conversation, because I watched the council meeting, and I think the staff was asking for about $450,000 for 12 months to supply these two existing campsites. And the council did ask to bring that number down, and I thought it came down to, I thought they ended up at $300,000. I don't remember exactly, but I also know the city manager said that that number, it was sure to be more than that, and he would be coming back for more when necessary. And I also know in talking to a highly placed official in public safety that he told me that the costs for this year for public safety related enforcement and so forth was going to exceed $1 million. So I think the cost here is being minimized a little bit by Mr. De La Grange. So a question there, and where are the extra people coming, and then a comment as far as the cost.
All right. Brian, you want to weigh in on this one?
Sure. Yeah. So regarding there being more campers and more people resting at these sites, you know, I don't have any special insight above and beyond what any other citizen has. You know, the counselors are volunteer positions, so I don't have any special insight of, oh, they're coming from, you know, California, or they're coming from Portland, or they're coming from the county, or, you know, I could guess just as easily as anyone else on that question.
Do we have any hard numbers or any estimated numbers locally?
Not that I'm aware of. Are you aware of any? No. Yeah, we're not. Yeah, so I'm not. That's a really hard question to answer, and I don't even know that the police department would be able to answer that question, but, you know, it would probably be them or Mint could potentially answer that. You know, the groups that are interacting with these individuals on a more regular basis, they might have an idea, but even they might not have a good idea. With regards to the cost, staff brought forward $440,000. That number did have a 50% contingency on it. So, you know, the real number was closer to 280. And then when you take out the demolition of that building, which was 70,000, it's closer to 210. And there was also an error in the numbers for the cost of the fencing, which in that meeting it was around $100,000. And afterwards we found out that it's really closer to $20,000. So if you fix that error, then the cost goes down even again. So it's closer to, you know, $130,000 per year. With regards to the cost at the public safety police department, you know, they're enforcing homeless issues just as much now as they were when the homeless people were in the parks. So it actually is making it easier for them to enforce now that they're in two locations instead of 15 locations. So I don't know that those costs have changed drastically from before.
All right. Cool. Go ahead.
Can I ask who will pay to manage a managed site or sites, because other than Mint, who has stepped up to do some of the smaller things, but that's not a full-time, you know, management by any stretch of the imagination. So who do you propose will pay to manage, full-time manage a site or sites?
Yeah, in the limited experience I have, you know, Rogue Retreat runs multiple sites in Medford, and I know they have multiple streams of funding, some of those being from the state, some of those being from other governmental agencies. I would assume they have other income streams as well, so there's several options for that. I would assume that if anyone would like to donate to help pay for that cost, Ward, we would certainly be happy to welcome your donation to help chip away at that cost.
Well, you know, I donate pretty big in terms of property taxes and city fees.
So
my water bills are, you know, $350, $400 a month.
I hear you.
I do donate significantly, but I guess what I'm asking, I wasn't asking about Medford. I know they've bought hotels over there, you know, in Medford for homeless, and I know that was being advocated here for a while, but I'm just asking who, you know, this has been going on for 4 years, and if you're proposing managed site, which I'm not saying is a bad idea, I mean, if you're going to have sites with that many people, you know, it would seem that they probably need to be managed. I'm just asking, you know, who are you proposing, you know, is going to pay that fee, Brian, that sure. That bill, because the local, even though we have a ton of nonprofits here, we haven't seen them step up to contribute. Other sure. than the part that Mint is playing currently.
Yeah, so the short answer is we don't know who's going to pay for that. So I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Mr. Fazer, okay, you want to weigh in on this?
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ward. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll weigh in on it. I maintain that the realistic budget for these two sites is going to be $250,000. I think that we will inevitably experience a shortfall in that revenue for those sites. Time is going to tell, right? But that's truly what I anticipate. And so it's kind of the number I'm using, which is immaterial to the point that I'm trying to make. Council has decided that the objectively reasonable solution for this community is to have city-owned resting sites. And by making that decision, we are forced to pay for it, right? And then you could make a connection between the legislators through House Bill 3115 has said we need to have these standards. And if these are our standards, then we are forced to pay this. And I'm taking a very firm position about that's the decision that we've made. That's the objectively reasonable standard. And that's, in my opinion, as far as I'm willing to go as far as expenditures. I think it's a valid question to ask where the revenue is going to come from when we start talking about the issue of management and amenities for these. I don't think that it's the city's responsibility at this point to provide those revenues, services, or management. In fact, I think it's up to the humanitarian nonprofit organizations to handle that management. And I hope that they find revenue, because I don't want to see the city contribute more than what it has agreed to be objectively reasonable in this community.
All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll continue after this important message. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress, ladies and gentlemen. Number to call, 541-472-1270. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, we're into the last about 8 minutes of the program today. Gentlemen, are there areas that we need to talk about and haven't yet?
We really love talking about the homeless problem. So I have another aspect that I'll just touch on really quickly, and that's the car camping portion. That's something that I think a lot of people in the community have noticed is the car campers around town. And that's something that council has not done a lot to address up to this point. Last year, it might have even been 2 years ago now, we enacted a car camping program where any business or any non-residential property could essentially sponsor two or three spots for car campers to help get them off the streets and out of the parks. Unfortunately, we have had zero uptake.
Zero, yeah.
We've had zero uptake on that. So I think we're going to have another discussion about that and see if there's some way that we can help kickstart or get some activity on that front. And that might look like some sort of, small grant program where we're helping to because the sites would have to have, they'd have to have a restroom available. They'd have to have, a garbage can. They'd have to have the same minimum sanitation standards that the resting sites have. So I could foresee, a potential small grant program to help incentivize some property owners to take advantage of this program. So that's to come, and I'm not sure what will come of it, but we will have a conversation here at some point about that.
Other than areas that have the parking spaces available, denying to do this, and I can certainly understand the reluctance of some organizations to offer that particular situation, is there an option for the city to create one of those? Are we talking about the Spalding area? Since, of course, it's away from services, but if they're car campers, they have the transportation.
There's certainly the opportunity for the city to do that, but I don't think that's something that we want to take on. We've already taken on a lot with these other resting sites, and so if we can find a way to incentivize the community to help bear the burden a little bit, so to speak, I think that would be preferable than the city government taking the whole thing on. And to be clear, if a property did agree to take on one or two or three of these car campers, they get to pick. It's not like the city's saying, here's your car campers, you they're your problem now. The property owner actually gets to say yay or nay to who they have on their property. So you have kind of an additional layer of comfort there, because you get to approve who's on your property.
How would you incentivize that?
Well, I mean, we haven't had conversations about that, but I could see potentially, you know, kind of maybe a matching cost, you know, share for the bathroom and the trash, which I think for a site would be very minimal, given, you know, you only have one or two or three campers. So you don't need a dumpster. You probably need one porta potty. You need like one trash can. So I think putting just a little bit of funding towards that could go a long way towards solving the problem.
All right. DJ, you want to weigh in on this one?
No.
No. Okay. All right. Brian, I'm going to go back to you for just a couple of minutes here. What do people need to take away from today's program in terms of being involved and informed in the city? What do people need to know, and what do you need to know from your people?
Well, I think that it'd be nice if people understand that all, you know, city council, we're all volunteers, we're all unpaid, and we're all here because we want what's best for the community. And there's eight of us, and we all have a little bit different opinion of what that is. But at the end of the day, we're all working towards what we think is best for the community. And we've all been working together to solve this issue of the homeless in the parks. And if you haven't been out to the parks lately, I highly recommend going, because all the horror stories you've heard of the past 3 or 4 years of the parks being overtaken by the homeless, that's over. Like, that's not the situation anymore. So please go out. You know, we have beautiful fall days right now. Go enjoy the parks before winter comes. You know, the leaves are going to be falling. It's going to be really nice. So I would encourage people to go enjoy the parks in the city. You know, we're working to get Caveman Pool renovated for the community. That's a 70-year grants passed institution that is long overdue for a renewal. So that's very exciting. Even though it's probably going to take a couple years to get done, it will be very nice when it's done. And yeah, there's a lot to look forward to in the community.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, Mr. Fazer, you have not filed for re-election for your city council seat, so that means at the end of the year you will no longer be here, with only two more council meetings scheduled here on the Tuesday Talk Show. I want to give you the last 3 minutes of the show to tell people what it's like to be on the council, some of your decisions, anything that you're proud of, any advice for your successor, whomever it may be.
It's bittersweet to come in here and realize that this may very well be my last radio show here at KJO as an elected official of this community.
As a private entity, you can buy time.
little poke there. Love it.
Well, little self-promotion.
Sure. I truly have enjoyed serving this community in this capacity, in this leadership capacity. I've looked back at my statements and my goals when I first ran for the city council seat, and I've reflected on successes and failures, and it has been a great experience. For anybody coming in, understand that the learning curve is steep, but it's doable. You need to be engaged. You need to want to know this material, and you need to be prepared to make decisions. Sometimes those decisions will be tough. Sometimes those decisions will be contrary to what you think is best for the community, but realizing that the council board is the one that makes a decision. There's no individual up there theoretically that has more power than the other. This is an equitable board that makes decisions as a group for the betterment of this community. Moreover, try to make your decisions based on what you think is best for the community. That would be my number one advice for anybody coming in to council. A word for the constituents: voting season is coming up. Do your best to make well-informed decisions. Vote for wisdom. The more information you have, the better. And it truly has been a wonderful experience serving in this capacity. Thank you, Chuck.
All right. Thank you very much. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Councilors Brian D. LaGrange and DJ Fazer have been your guests today, and we thank you very much. Stay tuned. More to come right here at 1270 Radio, 99.7 FM, and on the World Wide Web at KAJO.com.
Looking for a local